So tonight's topic is, we're talking about wise speech, and I kind of called it, how and when do we unconsciously lie? Lie is a strong word. So what I want to do is frame it, first of all, in just the context of what we call right speech or wise speech. And in the Buddhist teachings, wise speech shows up a couple times. It shows up in the precepts. It's the fourth of the five precepts. And it also shows up in the Eightfold Path. It's the third in the Eightfold Path. And in the Eightfold Path, it's part of the group that deals with cultivating virtues and high moral development. So it shows up twice. It's really, really important. And for me, it's probably one of the most difficult of all the precepts to follow. And the reason is that I just get caught in habit patterns. Habit patterns of thinking, habit patterns of reactivity. And the next thing you know, it's like, whoops, did I just say that out loud? I'm getting better, though. That's the positive news. So, right speech, in explained in negative terms, means avoiding four types of harmful speech. The first is just outright lies, words spoken with the intent of misrepresenting the truth. The second is divisive speech, spoken with the intent of creating rifts between people. The third is harsh speech, spoken with the intent of hurting another person's feelings. And then the fourth is idle chatter, spoken with no purposeful intent at all. And you might notice as we go through these, the word intent keeps showing up each time. Intention is really, you know, what our intention is a really important part of understanding the karmic implications of violating or lacking skill in any of the precepts. And we'll talk about that a little bit more later. The Buddha said, wise speech is spoken at the right time. It's spoken in truth. It's spoken affectionately. It's spoken beneficially. And it's spoken with a mind of goodwill. And perhaps some of you have seen the guidelines that are often used in talking about wise speech. And we're told to ask ourselves four questions when we're about to say something. Is it true? Is it kind? Is it helpful? And is it timely? And if it doesn't meet all of those qualifications, maybe better not to talk. And we could spend a lot of time on that, finding examples of something that we might say that's true. And maybe it's even kind. And maybe it's helpful, but it's just not the right time. And vice versa. Jack Kornfield, the Buddhist teacher, most of you are probably familiar with, says, this precept, wise speech, asks us to be aware of how we use the energy of our words. We spend much of our time talking and analyzing and discussing and gossiping and planning. Most of this talk is not very conscious or aware. It is possible to use speech to become awake. We can be mindful of what we are doing when we speak, of what the motivation is and what we're feeling. So some key points to emphasize about the focus of this fourth precept is, truth is not only emphasized because lies can be very hurtful and harmful, but because enlightenment is seen as a state in which truth is understood. We're talking about truth with the big T here. And the whole Buddhist path is a quest for truth. And truth is the opposite of delusion. Right? And delusion, as you might know, is one of the three poisons. Greed, hatred, and delusion. So as we practice right speech, and we really work towards promoting the truth, we're overcoming the poisons, the defilements of mind. So one of the things I want to focus on tonight is some of the subtler forms of not practicing skillful speech, and that's distorting the truth by exaggeration, often using absolutes. As Jack said, most of this talk is not very conscious or aware. And what I've noticed within myself and observing other people is that exaggeration and using absolutes is something that we're not even aware of. We just do. It's a habit pattern. Using words like all, always, every, everyone, never, none, no one. I'll give you some examples. How often have you heard or used statements such as, he never calls me back? Really? Never? Ever? And all the times you've ever called him, he's never once called you back? He always shows up late. Every single time. Or self-talk, right? This is really damaging. I never get it right. Or how about this one? This one hits close to home. I can't ever figure out computers. Never? You always do that. You never listen. She cuts me off every time I speak. My boss is always riding my ass. None of these doctors know anything. Guys, have you ever heard this from the women? I have nothing to wear. Nothing? This is one, this is a classic. I've lived a lot of different places, visited a lot of places, and I've heard this over and over again, it seems, just about everywhere I've been. No one in this city knows how to drive. Okay, so let me get this right. You're saying nobody knows how to drive, so that would include you. Okay. Men always leave the toilet seat up. Always? All music on the radio sucks. This one I heard on Monday. I've been following the conventions, what's going on. And so if you've been following, you might have noticed early in the week, there was this business with the Democratic National Convention, and they got into the emails and they found out that the head, this Deborah, what's her name, had been kind of fooling with, you know, stacking the deck, rigging things towards Clinton. So they interviewed a delegate, and the delegate says, now nobody trusts the Democratic Party. Nobody trusts the Democratic Party. So this person apparently did a survey of all 6.3 billion people on the planet and arrived at this. See how ridiculous it is when we shine a light on it, we talk about it, but this is what we do. And sometimes we use other expressions that don't use these words all and always and none. This is one that I hear. Shall we go grab something to eat? Yes, I'm starving. Have you ever said that? I'm starving? Is this an exaggeration? Is it the truth? Is it a subtle distortion? Is it skillful usage of language? So, for the next part of this, we're actually going to get you guys involved. So, I'm going to ask that you pick, I'd like to do this without moving a lot of chairs and stuff, but maybe just talk and turn to a partner. Maybe like over here, do three of you, or, you know, try to keep it simple. But pair off with one or a couple of other people, and I'm going to give you instructions as soon as you're paired up. So find somebody you can, somebody or somebodies that you can talk to easily. And I'm going to be using the little bell to get your attention when I need to talk. Like that. So here's your instructions. I'm going to give you about three or four minutes or so. And talk with your friends. Is this something you do, and how do you do it? What have you noticed about it? How has it affected your life? Or maybe it hasn't. So just take some time and talk about this. Go ahead. What are some of the things that you uncovered in your discussions? Just kind of just brief comments from a few of you.
We're kind of aware that we're judging other people for things that we do ourselves.
Uh-huh.
We know that, I shouldn't say we, but we did kind of have that in our group. I don't know if I should speak
for there was a consensus? So when we do that, we're judging others for things we do ourselves?
Not all the time.
Not all the time. Frequently, perhaps. Okay, good. I saw a hand over here. Or
well, we were saying how when we're emotionally involved with something, then it's more likely that we would exaggerate or embellish.
Exactly. That emotion puts a charge into it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I caught myself doing it. I was saying, when you're communicating with somebody else who tends maybe to be doing that, that you respond sometimes in kind. I said, like, if you take Donald Trump, for example, all the time he's using superlatives. And I went, oh, my God.
Yeah, there you go. It's easy to get hooked in, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, a couple more?
Well, I think also it makes us superior feel better.
You know, yeah.
Almost all this stuff, there's something about what you don't
right.
know.
Yeah, you guys are really, I mean, this is stuff that I got written down here. It's just good stuff. Yeah, anybody else?
Even the originality, I mean, look at the TV commentators. That they're not necessarily living what they're talking about. They're just reporting on what they're seeing and what they've heard. But a lot, that's interesting to know how, if they're actually living what they're talking about.
Yeah. And see, it's really interesting. If you want to get someone's attention, one way to do it is exaggerate and use absolutes. If you want to use a power play, it's a good way to do it, isn't it? How many of you have had been involved in situations with somebody you care about, and they've come up to you and said, you always, blah, 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 or you never? Right? Now, is that a setup for an argument? Right. All of a sudden, when we say that, we're stepping up and looking down in a way in that situation, and it really closes doors for a discussion, isn't it? Some of you, many of you I know, are aware of nonviolent communication techniques. I don't think that's in there. I don't think doing that is part of nonviolent communication. I'm not an expert, just guessing. Well, the truth is that this kind of behavior is the way children act, isn't it? You never let me stay up late. Everybody's mad at me. Nobody cares what I think. And you can kind of understand how they look at the world that way because they kind of have a limited perspective. They don't have a lot of frame of reference. The world revolves around them. You know, I used to work with kids. It isn't until they're about 16 that they don't get that they're the absolute center of the universe. Now that I think of them, some of them still do. But we won't go there. So, yeah, sometimes we exaggerate to make ourselves more interesting, to make our perhaps somewhat ordinary lives seem more exciting. We want to be loved. You know, so we make ourselves more interesting, more attractive seeming. Go ahead.
Here in the South, we're well known for being able to tell a story.
Telling a story, yeah. That's true. So there's an element of egotism behind a lot of this, isn't there? Whether we simply want to get our own way or want to control people, perhaps we're frightened in a situation. But what really comes back to a lot of times is, you know, we're going to take a fixed position and we're in the center of the universe and we're going to say, this is how things are. Nobody knows how to drive here. I'm the authority, right? Using exaggerations and absolutes really limits our willingness to just accept life and things and people as they are. This manner of speaking restricts our thinking, demonstrates our bias, and sometimes condemns. When others hear our usage of these words, they might very well bristle. When we hear others use these words, we might feel defeated. Creates separation, shuts down communication. But it's a common human trait to see things in black and white, especially when we're feeling insecure. That gray area creates an element of uncertainty that can be very uncomfortable. Speaking in demands reinforces an absolute mindset. Kind of, okay, I got solid ground I'm standing on here. I know what's going on. So if you're lacking in self-confidence, notice how you're talking to yourself using expressions like this. I can never figure things out. I can never figure women out. No guy has ever said that. So, you know, these speech patterns are a conditioned part of our culture, and for many of us, it's a conditioned part of how we communicate. So I want to talk a little bit about how we can open up, a different way of looking at this, where we open up to the possibility that we don't know what's going on, where we're moving away from trying to establish that ground of I'm certain, and I'm going to use absolutes, and this is how things are. Some of you have heard the term beginner's mind. Isn't that beginner's mind saying, I don't know? Shinryo Suzuki Roshi, the great Zen master, wrote the book Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And in it, he says, in the beginner's mind, there are many possibilities. In the expert's mind, there are few. Isn't that true? When we think we know everything, how many possibilities are there for newness and exploring? There was a Korean teacher, I'm not sure I pronounced his name right, Sun Song or something like that. He used to talk a lot about don't know mind. See if we can cultivate don't know mind. Same thing, right? So it just refers to an attitude of openness and eagerness, a lack of preconceptions when studying a subject. And when we're free from these expectations and judgments and prejudices and preconceptions, my experience has been is it opens me up to just being able to see things as they are more easily. Gee, I wonder what this is. I wonder what's going on. I wonder what this means. Being willing to say, I don't know the answer. It's being willing to let go of a fixed point of looking at things. And that can be very uncomfortable at times. Being open to seeing things with a different way. And I had this experience, Margaret will tell you, one day she was in the house, and I was sitting at my computer, which is at the front of the house, which opens to the street. And I looked, and I saw a car of the new neighbor who had just moved in. And what did I say, Margaret? Something like, oh, no! And she comes running in, what's wrong? And in the car, parked across the street, on the back window, were two Confederate flags. Decals. The decals. Two. Because apparently one's not enough to make the point. And what happened inside my mind and inside my body? It contracted. I was certain I knew who this person was. And then I noticed what I had done. I noticed, I felt what was going on in my body, and I saw my mind contract. I saw myself create judgments, and I thought to myself, I need to go and meet this person as soon as I can. And we offered it. And you know what? I've talked to this woman tons of times. She's as nice as the day is long. She is so warm and nice and friendly. I don't know what the deal with the flag is, and we're not going to go explore that, you know. But notice, I put up a wall that just because I thought I knew exactly what was going on. So that's a great example, and I'm just grateful that I have this practice where I could see how my mind was working, how I wanted to go there and be certain, where I was able to step back and go, you know what, I'm just going to find out what this person is like.
Did she come over and ask you to move or something? Help her move or something?
Yeah. Oh, I must have told this before.
Yeah, you did, but it was really...
Yeah, she asked me, I went over and helped her move furniture, and she's really sweet. She's really nice. So, anyway. So, let me see where I want to go with this. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I've kind of made the point, you know, that when we use absolutes like this, what we're doing is we're moving away from being willing to be uncertain and look at things in a fresh, open way.
Eddie?
Yeah?
I think there's also a power struggle going on, and the power struggle is especially true among couples, but I think it's also true of a lot of people. My brother-in-law, for example, he's always right. But I think it's ego, and you have to let go of ego to, mm-hmm. to allow that there are possibilities of all these things. Nobody has to be right. Mm-hmm. But it's a real power struggle.
Well, some of you have probably heard the expression, you can choose to be, would you rather be right, or whether would you rather be healed?
Happy.
I've heard it healed.
Happy.
Or happy. Do you want to be right, or do you want to be happy? You know? But that's being willing to be open, isn't it? Yeah. So, what are the ways to work with this? What can we do? If we notice that we get caught in these habit patterns of exaggerations and absolutes and wanting to have fixed opinions about things, what can we do? Well, we practice mindfulness. We sit down, we watch our breath, and then we see what arises in our mind. And we watch with this kind, compassionate attitude and notice, what are the habits of mind? What are the patterns of mind? What is our conditioned thinking? And we can watch it, we can observe it, we can label it. If we do this practice and we can check into our bodies and we notice how our body reacts or what we feel in our body when we experience judgment, when we experience hatred and greed and these other kinds of experiences, we can actually notice, like I did with the flag across the street, I felt this contraction in my body and I knew what was coming. This is what the practice does. We can check in and notice what we're feeling in our body, and we can create that space where we can skillfully respond to situations. If we watch what's arising in our mind, the thoughts that are arising in our mind with this practice, we can catch ourselves before we say something. Can you actually sometimes see the thoughts arising in your mind? Can you see what you're getting ready to say before you say it? Because once it goes out, yeah, can't take it back. It's out there. Yeah, you can go and clean it up, try to do damage control, but it's out there. So, this is what we can do. Notice our thinking. Notice our language. I do catch myself very often getting ready to use absolutes and exaggerations and things like that. And I'll catch myself and make that shift. So, you know, a statement that we talked about, like, he never calls me back. He frequently doesn't call me back. Or, You never listen? You often don't listen. None of these doctors know anything. Many of these doctors don't know anything. You know, there's always a way to modify it. And what happens when we do that? We move closer to the truth, don't we? We move closer to skillful speech. So I mentioned I wanted to talk about motivation and intention. Motivation or intention is an important element in determining if one is actually violating the fourth precept, right speech, and whether it constitutes a karmically unwholesome act. There's a clear distinction between expressing untruth with selfish intention than when we do it unconsciously. You know, the karmic implications of deliberately lying and distorting the truth are much more severe than when we use absolutes or exaggerations unconsciously. So that's the good news. You know, it's what you would call a mitigating factor. It's just part of our habit patterns. But it still is, not practicing skillful speech or wise speech. You know, and sometimes it's appropriate to tell a lie consciously. Do we sometimes lie to children to protect them? Is it appropriate sometimes to tell a lie?
Santa Claus.
Well, I don't know if that's to protect them. I used to teach English as a second language abroad in different countries, and I taught various levels, and sometimes I taught students who were still in the early stages of learning English. And learning English is not an easy language to learn. There are a lot of irregularities and exceptions. So as teachers used to joke that when we're working with people first learning the language, we lie to them all the time. We're constantly lying to them. Because when we explain how to use a certain tense, and anybody else ever teach English? If we actually told them all the irregularities and exceptions, their head would explode. So we say, okay, this is how you conjugate these verbs, and this is how you do things. Then when they get better, we go back and say, well, there are some exceptions. And these are the exceptions, but at least they've got a ground floor to stand on, and they're not going to freak out. So, you know, a lot of it is intention.
Yeah, I was taught to lie to my grandparents.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when JFK was killed, when he was shot in 1963, was it? Yeah. Do you know that his grandmother never found out?
Yeah.
They never told his grandmother. Because they said it would kill her.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. To me, that's skillful speech.
Yeah, that was the reason.
It's done with pure motivation.
Yeah, I think that was the reason we were, you know, taught to.
Yeah.
Because we weren't trying to consciously lie to hide stuff from our grandparents.
Yeah, yeah.
We knew what it might do to them.
Yeah. So it's about mindfulness, isn't it? Mindfulness and intention. If we're constantly checking in and noticing what we're about to say and what's going on, how it impacts people, can make a big difference. So I want to close this and just encourage you to watch what you're saying and see if you can start using words like usually and frequently and seldom instead of always and never, and see what a difference that makes. So I've got a couple of comments. One is a little piece of dialogue. Gilbert and Sullivan's, they wrote a comic opera called HMS Pinafore. And there's a dialogue between the captain and the sailors. And the captain says, I never, never sick at sea. Sailors say, what, never? Captain, no, never. Sailors, never? Captain, well, hardly ever. And then the closing words of wisdom, there was an American psychologist and author named Wendell Johnson, and he says, always and never are two words you should always remember never to use.